Hello again, it's me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It's me, Alice Slater.
We are back again in the year of our Lord 2019. We're happy that you've joined us again, and we're back with our scheduled programming. For our first episode, we're going to talk about a genre close to our hearts, which is gals doing bad things and concealing them.
Girls in cahoots.
Girls in cahoots is the official title of this episode. So we've got a couple of books that really inspired us to go with this topic. Two books that we love a great deal. And, you know, we can freestyle from there.
Yeah, one that's very new and one that's semi-new.
Yeah. So we hope you enjoy. The first book we wanted to talk about was Give Me Your Hand by Megan Abbott.
So this has come up a couple of times, I feel. Yep. I'm pretty sure it was on our, like, books of 2018 we were looking forward to. And I'm pretty sure it was in my top 10 as well.
Yeah,
so we've like bookended the year with it without ever like looking it directly in the eye.
Indeed. And even in the last episode where we were doing our favourite books of the year and you said like, Give Me Your Hand by Megan Abbott. And I was like, oh, I should have read that. Like, I should read more Megan Abbott because I so enjoyed The End of Everything. And this has given me the perfect reason to read it.
Would you say you have Abbott fever?
I think I have Abbott fever. I really think I do. Like, I loved The End of Everything, and I loved this even more. Like, I think this is so good.
Okay, so I read it, like, a long time ago, like, in proof before it was released. So, do you want to, like, summarise the plot?
Without giving hashtag spoilers, because I think this is such an enjoyable book for people to kind of find the plot by themselves, I would say the plot is about two women who were best friends. No, they weren't. That's such a misrepresentation. I'm going to return to this thought.
See, it's a hard one. That's why I didn't want to. I can't do it because even though I remember the plot, I can't remember what you know and don't know. And I was just. I'm worried about accidentally giving spoilers that will, like, fuck up the entire reading experience for someone.
So, in the present day, the main character, Kit, works at a very high-powered research lab, which has kind of been her driving force in her life since she was a teenager. She was friends with a gal called Diane at school, and all of a sudden Diane turns up at the lab and they start working together. And you know kind of from the beginning that
there is birth.
There is, yeah, kind of beef, and that Diane told Kit something that she'd done. And Kit has been carrying that around with her ever since. And that's kind of the plot. And then shit goes down once they start working together. But what I find really interesting about this is that they were neither best friends, nor are they rivals now. And it feels like those are dynamics that you would expect in a book with a plot like that. You would expect, I don't know, there's just something, it really isn't what I was expecting at all.
I feel like it's very different. It's a really unique book. I don't feel like there are that many books about women set in, like, the STEM world.
Mm.
There aren't many thrillers about women set in the STEM world. Like, I think I would struggle to name one off the top of my head. I think also, like, thrillers about female friendship often really rely heavily on, like, long, boring summers in suburbia, which we love. We're all about that. But this one is just so different in its approach.
Yeah. Yeah, and what I loved about this book was the way that, like, their relationship is very kind of symbiotic and, yeah, much not at all being rivals, but rather, like, encouraging each other to succeed. And that's a dynamic that I feel like you don't get a lot in teenage girl stuff. Either it's kind of simple friendship or rivalry. But I don't know, I found that this whole dynamic of, like, Diane being very clearly brilliant and Kit being, like, very good, but from a family where she was maybe not receiving the kind of support or encouragement that she needed to, like, unlock her brilliance, and it was Diane that really, like, pushed her to become the person that she is. Yeah, there was just so much in this book that was so interesting and different, and, like, I loved the plot. I loved it. I loved reading this so much.
Did you guess the ending?
No! I never guessed the ending.
I know, with this one, nor did I. I feel like it was, it's just very well constructed. And although, so it, you know, Megan Abbott scatters breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
So you're always like on the trail. But it's one of those books where I just think it's, there is just no way to guess what's going to happen. It's so unpredictable in that way.
Yeah.
Without it being gimmicky.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's no fucking time travel. There's no, like...
random bullshit.
Rabbit out of a magician's hat. Yeah. It's just very succinctly plotted with characters that are very well realised.
Yeah. And I never guess anything that's going to happen, but I also just found that this was so pleasurably unpredictable. Like, I really enjoyed just really having no idea what it was, no, what direction it was going in. I truly loved this. I thought it was amazing.
I'm so glad that you're reading Megan Abbott now.
After all these years.
After all these years.
You've really put in the time.
I love her so hard.
Yeah, but I love her writing. I find it's never, like, cliche or boring. It's never too much. I don't know. I love it. I love it.
Do you have any reading resolutions this year?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I feel like most of my reading does lean very heavily towards, like, The White Lady. So I should probably, you know, aim to read more of the non-white person, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think that's a good resolution.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, every year I do my Goodreads aim is to read 100 books. I've never managed it, and I probably never will, because I will never try.
Yeah.
But I agree, I noticed with my top 10, they were all pretty much from two publishing houses, like all Picador and all Faber.
That's because they're massive overachievers, what can we say?
Like, with a couple of exceptions, but nothing, like, wild. So I think I want to try and read more from more publishers this year. And also, you're right, like, I definitely, the kind of fiction I like tends to be written by white women. So looking for the kind of fiction I like, but from a kind of more diverse spectrum of writers is, I think, a good goal to have.
And, like, obviously that is partially on us, like, the choices that we make in what we read, but it's not like it's confined to the end user, this problem. Like, this is a problem embedded in publishing in general, and it feels like at least 2019 is the year where there is, like, the most good shit happening.
But that's why I feel like it is on the reader to a degree to find those books.
Yeah.
Because they are now being published. Yeah, yeah. They are there. It's just finding them and making sure that we're, like, keeping up with everything that's happening and making sure that we're finding that kind of shit that we want early, not coming to it late.
Yeah, and I think
to give it, like, the boost that it needs.
Specifically, I think stuff like dialogue books will make a really big difference this year. They're doing some stuff that I think is going to turn out real good. So yeah, I think that, you know, that's kind of what I'm going to do this year.
So speaking of the kind of books that we like and looking for them in other places, leads us perfectly onto our next book.
My Sister the Serial Killer by Ayinkan Braithwaite is a book that we have been looking forward to for a very long time.
I feel like since the very first time the book cover was kind of revealed, ages ago, I was like, fuck, that's going to be a banger.
And I know that you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but I think that the cover of My Sister the Serial Killer has done so much to, like, build hype around it. It's such a good cover.
It really is, because it tells you literally everything you need to know.
Yeah, like, it's about, like, a cool, hot young woman.
With fucking the reflection of a knife in her glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, that's the shit we want to read.
Yeah.
And, like, excuse me. All being well, we will be talking to the author tomorrow, or whatever day when you listen to this that is. And I would really like to talk to her about the cover, because I just feel like, does she think the cover is important? You know, is she happy with it? Because I feel like it has done so much for that book.
I'm yeah.
Like, I want to know if she likes it. Is she into it? Who knows?
I bet she does.
I hope so. So tell me about My Sister the Serial Killer.
Okay, so in a nutshell, My Sister the Serial Killer is about a young woman in Nigeria whose sister is a serial killer. Her sister's incredibly beautiful and has an unfortunate habit of murdering her boyfriends. In which case she then phones the narrator, who's called...
Korede.
She calls Korede for help cleaning up. And it's a really short book. Like,
you read it so quickly.
Yeah, you just slam through it. It's also written, like, in a very kind of succinct, quick style, which I really like. Like,
agree.
It's so pacey. It's like the perfect book to take on holiday and you bang it out like over a whole afternoon by the pool.
And it has very short chapters that each have a very like specific title. So you kind of almost already know what might happen in the title before you start it. And yeah, each chapter is about like maximum like 5 pages long. So it's really quick to read and extremely satisfying. But yeah, it is, it's exactly the kind of stuff that we want to read, but from like an angle and from a world that we don't normally read it from.
Especially as like we were saying earlier that we were kind of discussing before we started recording what we would compare this to. And I feel that if you're starting to get a little bit jaded with books about incredibly handsome serial killers, like Dexter, Caroline Kepnes Yu, even like the Hannibal Lecter type, this kind of sophisticated, beautiful serial killer. Like this is such a, like the antithesis of that while being in that tradition.
Yeah, it's such a like strange, interesting, different book. Because like, it's not a thriller, really, but it kind of is. Like, I don't know. It's really, would you say it's a thriller?
I think it's absolutely a thriller. Okay. I do, because like the tension ultimately comes from the fact that Koreeda is in love with a doctor in the hospital that she works, and then her sister, Ayula, starts dating him. So, like, that aspect of, like, threat.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And also, like, there's a really fun other threat in the book that you kind of don't see coming, which is not as important, but I really enjoyed. So, yeah, I just feel like there's so much in this that is, like, kind of fun and playful, and it's not, I don't know, it doesn't feel like too heavy, or for something that's about murders you kind of don't feel, I don't know,
it's a little bit satirical, isn't it? Yeah, like, it's quite fun.
Yeah, that was why I was like, would you say this is a thriller, because I think there is something like very satirical about it. Maybe it's a perfect blend of both of them.
But that's why I like, it makes me think of things like Dexter.
Yeah.
Because that's not really a thriller.
No, yeah, yeah.
I've never read the book, so I'm thinking specifically about the TV show, but
I didn't even know it was a book.
Oh, yeah, so I did. There's like a million of them, and they're all called things like Dexter Will Dead You.
Oh.
Dexter and the Dead, I can't remember. No, yeah, I'm thinking of Peter James. But they all have names like that.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
Anyway, I don't know, I never fancied them. But yeah, anyway, it makes me think of books like, and series like that, you know, where it's not necessarily about the fear of being caught, but the kind of fear of the consequences kind of catching up with the main character, whatever they may be. In this case, she's not actually worried about her sister being caught. She's worried about her sister doing a murder that she actually cares about.
Yeah. And then by the end, I think she is kind of worried about her sister being caught. And that's what I think is really interesting about the book is like, Ayula is kind of awful.
Oh, she's the worst.
Yeah, she's really awful. And, like, the dynamic between her and her sister, Koreeda, who's, like, the main character and the narrator, like, I don't know, I really buy it. Like, that kind of, Koreeda, who's the main character, is much less kind of conventionally attractive than her sister. And, you know, there's this whole passage of, like, if my sister stole an apple, my mother would blame me for letting her have been hungry in the first place. I just love that. I love it. I love how awful Ayula is. But you can totally see why all of these guys are, like, obsessed with her. Like, it really is interesting about that kind of beauty standards and dynamics between women and, it's almost like there's nothing that Koreeda could ever have done to warn any of the men that would have been believed. Because it would have either have been dismissed as, like, crazy or as, like, jealousy.
Well, that's her plight, isn't it?
Yeah.
That she can never, she can't do anything, even to save her sister from herself. Like, there's nothing she can do to intervene.
Yeah.
Because of her standing in society compared to, like, this beautiful, enigmatic sister that she has. It's a really interesting dynamic. And I like the fact that the character genuinely doesn't come across as jealous of her sister's beauty.
Yeah, it's more like that she's kind just of sees it.
Yeah, and also it's just kind of a drag. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that she wishes that for herself. It's that she wishes that someone would just be into her for who she is.
Yeah, and, like, she recognises that it is kind of an inconvenience for her sister because it gets her into all of these, like,
scrapes,
sticky situations. But yeah, I loved it. I loved it. And I think I feel very justified in my excitement about this book for the last, like, 2 years or whatever it's been.
Me too. And, like, we did struggle to decide what to pair it with. Because we decided to try and do just 2 books per episode that sit closer together, rather than a broad theme and having, like, some that fit in, you know, in a different way to others. This one is a really hard one to pair up, because it really is, like, nothing else I've read and rated.
Yeah.
You know?
But it is, in a lot of ways, similar to Give Me Your Hand, so I think we did very well.
Well done.
Well done, you. Yeah, I feel very happy to have read these back to back. They both bang, and they're both very similar and very different. Alice has just taken a bite of a delicious sweetie that I've given her.
I thought I'd have time. She looked like she was going to speak for a minute,
so I thought I'd have time. Big breath.
Yeah, so I was like, perfect. Like when you're like DJing and you play a long song to go for a wee.
Exactly.
I was like, she's
put on
the Rude Sandstorm.
I was gonna say Blue Monday by New Order, but the extended mix of Darude Sandstorm would also work. Because I remember we once got feedback from a listener about us eating biscuits during an episode, and it's like, have you not seen pictures of us? Of course we're eating biscuits. How do you think we maintain these physiques if not to be eating biscuits 24/7?
We're trying to be more professional. It's 2019.
20 biscuitine. where was I? Yeah, I love both these books. I'm very happy that I read them back to back. It's been such fun. I'd say My Sister the Serial Killer is a much more fun book, but I just found the reading experience of Give Me Your Hand so fun. I enjoyed every page. I loved it.
They definitely, like, fulfill different reading requirements, I think. Like, I feel like My Sister the Serial Killer really is one that I wish I could save for a time when I know I'm going to be able to just read it and, like, just hoof through it one go. Give Me Your Hand, I think, because it's, like, that much denser, a lot happens. You go back and forth in time, and it's one that I'd be more comfortable, like, a commute read, where reading it in, like, long chunks over, like, the period of, like, a few days or a week.
Yeah, and I also think a big difference between the two of them is, like, I didn't come away from reading My Sister the Serial Killer feeling, like, spiritually troubled. But there is something incredibly, like, dark and sad about Give Me Your Hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just, it feels like with Give Me Your Hand, you see how somebody could get themselves into that position. Whereas with My Sister the Serial Killer, it's like, that's probably not going to happen to me, you know? Like, I'm probably not going to choose to go down that route in life.
If I did a murder, I would probably not phone you to help me clean up.
I'd get very stressed out about
it. You've got long fingernails, like, yeah. It wouldn't be any good.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I've also Googled, like, body disposal methods already for writing purposes. So I would not... it would just be a bad idea. The police would know it was me.
Would you phone me, though?
I don't know. Who do you... Maybe, yeah. You seem, like, wily and you've read a lot of thrillers.
I know who I would phone out of everyone that we know.
Whom? Oh, Emily. Beth!
I'd phone Beth. Beth, you just know that she's going to have, like, the perfect pair of, you know, rubber gloves ready.
And a really sharp knife that she used to, like, chop up some lamb or whatever, you know.
And, like, an expensive mop.
Yeah, true. Beth is the solid answer. We know she doesn't listen to this because we talk about her sometimes and she never mentions it, but...
This is like an Easter egg to see which of our friends listen to our podcast.
Yeah, we should do this more often. Okay, so I know I'm obsessed with Megan Abbott. What should I read next?
Okay, so she's got 3 other books published in the UK. She did also publish some, like, more noir-based stuff, which I'm not sure has ever come over here. I've not read any of it anyway. So you can choose between Olympic gymnasts, cheerleaders, or schoolgirls who all catch this, like, infection, a fever.
Megan Abbott fever, if you will.
Megan Abbott fever. So I think the fever is probably my fab out of those 3. But I also think you would particularly enjoy Dare Me, which is the cheerleader one.
Cool. Okay,
but they're all good.
Yeah, I was going to say, they all sound banging. Yeah. They all sound really banging. And I'm happy that I've got all this to look forward to. It feels, you know, it's an unusual position to be in, to have, like, held out for so long for literally no reason. And then have all of that to look forward to.
Sometimes, though, like, you just don't get around to shit. Especially when they're all backlist. We, you know, we have a lot of reading to do. sometimes maybe it is good not to read something for the sake of it, if you know that we're going to talk about it in the pod eventually.
Yeah, it's true. Because I had to reread My Sister the Serial Killer, even though I literally only read it a month ago. Because,
really?
As we know, as we say in every episode, I do not remember anything. So
I find sometimes I need to remind myself of characters' names. And sometimes I have to remind myself of the actual plot. But, like, the feel of it stays with me.
I could tell you whether or not I liked something, like, years later. Or I could tell you, like, particularly memorable bits. But I couldn't tell you, like, character names.
You know what's weird? You know when you, like, look at the list of books that you've read over the last few years, and some of them you're like, there's nothing left. What the fuck was that? Literally nothing. I couldn't tell you a thing.
And I feel like that was particularly prevalent in the, like, post-Girl on the Train thriller years.
Yes, there were some really generic thrillers where you kind of had essentially the same characters in every single one, even though they were written by different authors.
Yeah.
That actually is what I'm thinking of. I read loads of, like, supermarket shelf thrillers, you know? Like, ones where they obviously got, like, a good bundle of money, but they are so forgettable. If you read them on the Kindle, it's over.
Yeah, if you don't have the cover to look at. See, that's where I've been wasting too much of my time with the white ladies. Like, because that's who writes them books.
That's the thing, and I feel like pre-Girl on the Train, I felt like I could trust. If a new thriller, I was working in Waterstones then, if we got a bunch in of a new thriller written by a woman, I could trust it's probably going to be decent. It may not, like, be earth-shattering, but it will be decent.
Whereas, memorable, at least.
Yeah, like, I'm going to have a good time reading it, and I'll be able to, like, I won't feel like I've wasted my time or money.
Yeah.
But then I went through a phase where, like, they all had very similar covers. They all had very similar names. I read maybe 5 or 6 over the course of a year, none of which were worth reading. And it's a shame, man. It's like, no, like, we don't need to have, like,
complete saturation.
Yeah, like, let's just still have some kind of base level of quality control, you know?
Yeah, and obviously this is something we talked about before, but, you know, there's no harm retreading this ground about which we're very passionate. Do you want to talk about Marie Kondo?
Yeah. So have you heard of Marie Kondo?
Is that us doing a Flight of the Conchords thing?
I don't know.
So yeah, I read The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, or whatever it's called, a couple of years ago, when I felt like my stuff was just, like, overwhelming me, because I am someone who accumulates shit at quite a frightening rate, and I try to be less like that, and especially now that I am no longer a fashion blogger, I don't have as many clothes coming in. Because there was a time when, like, I was just accumulating clothes at, like, a very unsustainable rate. So now the clothes bit is kind of under control, and I'm very good at just, if I realise that I'm not wearing something, I'll just take it to the charity shop. But, unfortunately, the thing that has replaced that is, since I've started doing this podcast with you, my good friend and business partner, Alice Slater, is I have an awful lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know you can also relate to.
I have a lot of books.
So, the reason that this has come up in relation to Marie Kondo is that there is a new TV program on Netflix hosted by Marie herself. And there's been so much chat on the internet about her approach to books. Would you like to take over?
Yeah, so her approach to books is the same as literally everything else. You're supposed to take each book off the shelf, look at it, hold it, and ask yourself, does this bring me joy? If it does not bring you joy, then you get rid of it.
Yeah.
Whether you've read it or not.
And if there was a bit of it that you liked, that you'd like to keep, she advocates removing a bit, you know, like,
yeah,
cutting, like, out some pages to keep, because that was the bit that you liked.
Which, I mean, I do think that's quite wild.
Yeah.
Like, take a photo of it.
Yeah.
Keep the book. If there's a bit you like, then I don't understand why you wouldn't keep the book.
Keep the whole
anyway
book. Treat yourself.
Yeah, but I think, like, removing the pages, I would just say you're never gonna look at them,
and also that book is not gonna be useful to someone else.
Yeah,
like
you, but if you just cut out the section you enjoy, I guarantee you will never fucking look at it, because if you don't have the spine to remind you that it's there, it will literally just disappear from your brain.
True.
So that I understand, but I think people are also, like, shocked at the idea of getting rid of books on, like, just based on
space.
And, like, there was a tweet that went viral that was saying, like, you need a library. Humans need to have books around them to be nourished intellectually, which I think is hooey.
Yeah, and I don't think it's people need a library. It's like, if you enjoy reading, you need to be reading. and whether you keep what you've read after you've read it is irrelevant. Like, even if you operated a literal, like, Yo Sushi conveyor belt of books where it just, you know, it never stays, you know, in yeah. one place, and like as soon as you read it you get rid of it, I think that still works fine. I don't think that owning books is that important. Like, I'm not much of a rereader anyway, so most of the books that I own are books I've never read. And obviously that's, you know, becoming an increasing problem as we get sent more and more and more, which obviously I'm very grateful for because I do read a lot, but it's kind of impossible to keep on top of everything we get sent.
But I would rather, if I had two bookshelves, I would rather have a whole case, two bookcases. I'd rather have a whole case of books I've read and a whole case I haven't read.
Yeah.
Than a perfectly curated set of books I've read.
Yeah, agree. Right?
And I'd obviously rather be able to revisit my beloved favourites, and like own my own copies than have two entire cases of books I've never read.
Agree.
But I don't know. I mean, obviously we do, unlike the average reader, like we get sent a lot of books, we get given a lot for free. And one of my rules, a new rule that I have, is that if I have had a proof for longer than a year and I haven't read it, it's going.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to get around to it. And if I do decide to read it, I'll just buy a copy. And then my other rule is that if I love a book enough to want to keep the proof, then I buy a copy, because that's how I support
the author
that I
like.
Really like.
Yeah.
And I didn't used to do that when I was a bookseller. Like, I didn't have as much money, so, you know, I'd sell loads of copies, and that's how I would absolve myself from not buying one for myself. Now I can, so I do.
Also, we have this additional problem, which is that you can't get rid of proofs very easily, or at
yes.
all.
Yeah.
It is not... So, the area that I live in and where Alice also frequents, and this also kind of happens where you live as well.
Oh, is yeah.
We have these little boxes outside people's houses, little cute bird box looking things that have books inside them. I get a lot of cool books out of those boxes, and I would like to put books in the boxes, and I do when I can, but most of the books that I want to get rid of are proofs, and I can't do that. Because them's the rules, so you just have to put them in the recycling, which feels like such a waste, but I'm playing by the rules, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even feel that guilty, because proofs are not designed to be read more than a couple of times.
Yeah.
I have some proofs that, like, I've read, and then I lent to, like, other booksellers or whatever, and, like, after two or three readings, they're fucked. Like, you're not going to be able to get another reading out
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, true.
So I don't feel that guilty recycling those. And I don't feel that guilty about getting rid of books in general. Like, if I was a fucking millionaire and lived in my castle with a massive Beauty and the Beast style library, like, that would be lovely.
Yeah.
But that's literally never going to be my life.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to have enough space to keep every single book that crosses my path. And what a waste. Like, they're designed to be read. They're not designed to be looked at.
Yeah, that's why I feel bad about not being able to put my proofs in the book boxes, is because I want to share these cool books that I liked with other people, but I can't. But whatever.
My main takeaway, though, is I just feel like, as book people on the internet in general, we'd all be a lot happier if we just concerned ourselves less with other people's habits.
So true.
It's interesting to, like, have a chat with your friends and, like, learn how people feel about books and, you know, how they read them, and etc. But this whole, like, faux horror at anything to do with reading habits just bores the absolute shit out of me.
It's like that tweet that got like 10 million retweets the other day about some dude watching a woman snap the spine on her book.
Get
like,
a life. Just get life. A
it's
fucking
her book.
Life.
It's her book. Just, like, what is wrong with you? Why do you care? Like, literally, why do you care?
But even, like, that individual's tweet is one thing. The 10 million fucking people who retweeted it. Get a life.
Also get a life. All of you, get lives. You can very much see what page we are on this.
Yeah, it's the let people live page.
Yeah, do what you want.
And, you know, I actually saw a great tweet by Frog Croakley, who I enjoy.
Yeah.
That compared the kind of... that kind of book discourse to, like, your regional preferences of pronunciation or what sauce you put on a bacon roll and if you call it a roll or a bap or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of in the same ballpark where it doesn't really fucking matter.
It literally
doesn't matter. Like, holding on to these arguments as, like, some kind of form of identity.
Yeah.
And you're enough, man. You're enough.
Yeah.
You are enough.
It doesn't matter what you do with your books. You have enough going for you.
What sauce do you put on your books?
I put brown sauce on my books. I don't like ketchup.
Don't you?
At all, no.
You don't like ketchup?
The only thing I will consume ketchup in knowingly is McDonald's double cheeseburger, and that's just because I don't want to be one of those people that has to ask for shit to be taken off my burger.
The more you know.
Yes. It's not, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that, like, I'm not gonna like yell about it because I think it makes me sound like a dick. But yeah, I don't like ketchup. I know my place.
All right, good chat.
Yeah. And do keep your ear out for the companion piece to this episode, which, as I mentioned earlier on, is an interview with the excellent author Oyinkan Braithwaite, who wrote My Sister the Serial Killer. So we will drop that very soon. Listen up.
Bye.